Good morning in the Chaos Arto Kitchen. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash, and we'll meet our special guest who's joining us today from San Francisco in just a moment. But I want to pay tribute to the great job that the folks from the Heritage Turkey Big Dinner did last Sunday night at the Atwood Ranch in Glen Ellyn. Agriculture in Sonoma County has really been given a boost with record-breaking proceeds from this year's Heritage Turkey Sunday Supper. The event was, as I mentioned, last Sunday, November 4th at the Atwood Ranch, and it drew a record audience of over more than 300 guests. There was a wait list of I don't know how many people. Overall, the Heritage Turkey Sunday Supper raised $50,000 or so, which will benefit Sonoma County 4-H, the Slow Food Russian River, Sonoma County Farm Trails, and the Worth Our Weight Culinary Program. Direct money to help those programs. And the high point for me, and I think for all the 300 people, there were 9 local turkey growers from the 4-H program. So that would mean these are kids between approximately 11 and 18 years old who were there with their turkeys. You got to talk to each of these kids individually and ask them about their involvement in Sonoma County agriculture. And at the end of the dinner, the turkeys were auctioned off. One of the Heritage Breed turkeys, each kid got up on the stage, gave a little speech about who they were, and then the bidding began. And the turkeys averaged more than $700 per turkey at the auction. And the highest one went for $950. And I've been to a lot of auctions before, but this high-end wine auctions. But there, this was one of the most electrifying moments I've ever seen. The emotions ran so high. The kids were so excited to see that the efforts that they had put in raising these turkeys, since they're 2 to 3 days old, these birds raised such record-setting numbers, and they will grace Thanksgiving tables all around Sonoma County. So congratulations to everybody who put so much effort into this beautiful, beautiful event. There's also a photo of one of the young ladies and her award-winning, prize-winning turkey on the KSRO website. Just go to the KSRO Good Food Hour, and you will see her in her 4-H uniform holding or cradling her turkey. I was out in the West 9th Dutton Street area tooling around yesterday looking for something good to eat. And I remember somebody told me, Steve, if you want to find the only place around in Sonoma County we can get fry bread, go to this place. They got dynamite fry bread. So I went over to 501 West 9th Street. It's called Harry's Market. And I really had the burn on for some fry bread. And here's a big sign. It said, sorry, fry bread shop closed. Family emergency during the month of November. A reopening December 3rd, Monday. Thank you. And I talked to the clerk at the market, and he said, definitely come back because this fry bread is great. They have tacos and a lot more things, too. They have, of course, the native tacos and the fry breads and the garlic butter fry bread and cinnamon bun fry bread. And the cool thing is these super native tacos that they have. This guy was really proud of what he does. He graduated from an entrepreneurial school, the owner of the company. And he's real proud of what he's done. So check it out, the fry bread shop, Derek Muro, M-U-R-O, Native American Indian entrepreneur over on West 9th Street if you're in the area. And then swing around and go over to Sonoma Crust, which is another really cool place. Sonoma Crust is a chicken and waffle little restaurant owned by an entrepreneur, 1040 North Dutton. It's right near Maxwell Court. And I had a dynamite chicken waffle sandwich. That's her specialty, these panko-crusted sandwiches. They also have a Nutella waffle, limited menu, but delicious menu that focuses on fried chicken. They also have bone-in fried chicken, too. And they have great beignet, too. It's hard to find. You can just whiz by this place, but she just installed a patio several months ago, so you can eat outside. You can order online. But check her out and help support her. Both of these little restaurants are within 60 seconds of each other. It's called Sonoma Crust. And go online. You'll see all the information about how to contact her and the website and the phone number to order in advance. And I think they're opening early for beignet and coffee. So those are two good places if you're in the 9th Street and Dutton Road vicinity of Santa Rosa and you're hungry. Let's learn all about knives. That's coming up next.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Hey folks, this is George Adair from Bay Equity Home Loans. We're your local lender, but I want you to know we have cutting-edge technology available to you. I'm really excited to announce our Bay Equity Express closing. You don't have to go search the internet to find your home loan lender. We're right here in Santa Rosa, Petaluma, and Windsor. Bay Equity Home Loans offers many loan programs with amazing technology. At closing, you can digitally sign your loan documents. It saves time, saves frustration, and we get to the closing process so much faster. If you're buying in Sonoma County, the speed to close is one of the most important factors in getting your offer accepted. The reputation of Bay Equity locally is amongst the best. Visit us at bayequityloans.com or call 707-583-8100. Again, 707-583-8100. Bay Equity is your home for loans.
Equal housing lender subject to credit approval. NMLS ID 76988. The transaction will be made pursuant to the Department of Business Oversight California Finance Lender Law and our California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. NMLS ID 245370.
Enjoy the last of the summer vegetables and fruits at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. The market is popping with the colors of fresh greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, walnuts, almonds, and even fresh chestnuts. Meet local ranchers offering a variety of quality meats, beef, pork, and lamb. Salmon Creek Ranch is taking orders for your Thanksgiving or Christmas goose. There's fresh fish and crab from Anna's Seafood. Everything you need to create the freshest Thanksgiving feast is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. How are you?
I'm doing good.
This is quite an impressive array we have in front of us. We have some of the finest knives in the world in the KSRO Kitchen this morning.
It's great to see them, and a lot of them are old guys.
Well, old guys.
You know, they're kind of like me.
I was thinking back the last time we really talked about knives. It was 2012. Do you remember why we talked about knives in 2012?
What was that?
We were reading the New York Times obituary of Barry Bescher. Do you know who Barry Bescher is? He's the co-creator of the Ginzu knife.
Oh.
And he had passed away that month. And so we talked about knives and how the Ginzu had really was the first major, certainly television commercial ever that we remember from the late 70s and 80s, and how he made up this name Ginzu because it sounded Japanese, and yet the knives were made by a company named Fetzer in Cleveland,
is that right?
In Cleveland, Ohio. And he said, no one will buy a knife named Fetzer.
Yeah.
We've got to think of something
exotic. Yeah.
So they came up with Ginzu. Yeah. And he sold millions and millions of these knives. And
and they were great in the beginning. I mean, for the first couple of months.
But don't you remember, in Japan, the hand can do more than just... Mm-hmm.
It can be used as the knife.
But not to cut a tomato. Mm-hmm. And so when people used to ask this guy, what does Ginzu mean? And he said, it means I never have to work again for the rest of my life. Anyway. Having said all that, we want to welcome to the KSRO Kitchen Josh Donald, owner of Bernal Cutlery, and a new book called Sharp, The Definitive Introduction to Knives, Sharpening and Cutting Techniques with Recipes from Great Chefs. And we are so glad that you could join us on the show today, because Thanksgiving's just days away, Hanukkah, Christmas, all kinds of occasions when knives are going to be needed in the next few months. So thanks for coming in, and thanks for bringing this stunning array of knives.
Thanks for having me.
It's just beautiful. When did you begin Bernal Cutlery?
Bernal Cutlery began nearly 15 years ago.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco, in the back of my apartment in Bernal Heights. I was home with my then 9-month-old son, and little career switch, and thought that I was going to be just doing a quick little stopover into sharpening to help pay for a bag of groceries and pay a bill or something like that, and it just kind of started from there. Started off sharpening, picking up knives in the neighborhood.
So would you talk about, because in the book, it is your personal journey with knives. And I love that how it all started in 1978. Can you give us a little glimpse of?
Yeah, so I found a little pocket knife in a disused set of dresser drawers in my house in Echo Park, Los Angeles, growing up. I was 5 years old, and it was a little hunk of gold.
Yeah. And then you went on to a buck knife.
Yeah, the buck knife.
Which I think most people, well, I don't know whether most people are familiar with it or not, but it's kind of a legendary knife.
If you had a knife in the 70s, you would have had a buck knife if you had a pocket knife.
But then the epiphany came when you were 19 and the Japanese knife.
Sure. So I'd gotten into sculpture. I was doing wood carving. I discovered Japanese wood carving tools. They make some amazing chisels. And from there, I discovered Japanese knives. Found some kind of rustic style Japanese kitchen knives. And
What's so fascinating in the book is you kind of trace the history. I mean, going millions of years back to cutting instruments of all kinds, which I guess were originally stone or flint or something like that.
Yeah.
But in more modern times, it's that comparison of Western knives, mostly German and French, to Japanese knives. What's the difference?
Well, there are some distinctions that certain elements of Japanese tool history have lent to real specialized knives. So it wasn't all that uncommon to have knives for very particular purposes in Japan, going back quite a while. So there were certain knives that would be somewhat all-rounders, a knife for doing fish butchery, a deba, that would look a little bit more familiar to us. It has a heavy triangular blade. It looks like a short chef's knife, but it's real heavy. Those are only for doing fish butchery. And then this knife here, the Nikiri, that's a vegetable knife. Mm-hmm. That's another really old Japanese knife. And for a very long time, you didn't have a crossover from that protein to vegetable. Whereas with the Western knives, the chef's knives, like this old French knife here, this carbon steel sabatier, this is an all-rounder. So this is going to be making that jump between vegetables and proteins, animal proteins. You know, while it's not a butcher knife per se, it's made to be real versatile. Mm-hmm. It's made to cover a wide range of ground.
It was interesting. You gave credit to both Julia, and Jacques Pepin for kind of raising the consciousness in America of the they teaching French technique. Raising the consciousness about what a good knife could do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, they really brought restaurant techniques into the home. And in a lot of ways, when I first started this book, I thought that I was going to be spending most of the time in Japan, because that's where the shop has really brought me, you know, mostly in contact with. I've been selling vintage and antique knives since I started Bornell Cutlery. But it's really Japanese knives that's the rabbit hole I've gone down the most part. And there's the biggest demand for it within the professional chefs and a lot of home cooks as well, because the Japanese just make amazing knives. But I didn't think I was going to spend as much time in Europe as I did. And it ended up being really important. I feel that I don't feel I would have really understood why people are using the knives at home, in professional kitchens, in the West and in Japan, if it wasn't for looking at the history of the restaurant and seeing why these two knives in particular, the chef's knife and this utility knife, or the French call it an office knife, or the Japanese call it a petty knife, why these two knives have become so important and have really dominated professional kitchens, and then also, you know, home cooks' arsenals, you know, in such an important way, and why that is. And it's really the a la carte restaurant and that style of cooking. And that goes back to, you know, Julia Childs and, you know.
Yeah. So if somebody were, you know, Christmas is coming. If somebody were to go buy a knife for themselves or for a friend or a family member or something, where would you start?
Well, I think that the most important knife from my perspective. And some people might have different views with this, but I think a chef's knife is the way to start. The Santoku, which is the kind of shorter version of a chef's knife, would be, you know, in that same category. But I think having a really good chef's knife is the real important part. That's the center of your kit.
So you talk in the book about kind of the difference in kind of where these two came from, Japanese versus Western knives. And part of it was the whole steel making process is sure. different in those areas. But I was fascinated to see, which I was aware of, but the Japanese version of the Western knife,
yeah.
which I guess has become very popular.
That's the real popular knife in our shop, you know, for professionals and home cooks. I mean, it's...
I love how the book is organized, because after the introduction, you get right into the history of the Bronze Age, and then the Iron Age, and then the steel age, and then the mystical. Would you describe, encapsulate the Wootz steel, Wootz, which I'd never heard of before?
Yeah, so the term Damascus steel is traces back to this crucible steel. It was steel that was made in small batches in southern India and Sri Lanka. The manufacture of it was kept very secretive there. And there was a whole process of making it during the monsoons. You would use the monsoon winds to create blast furnaces to create these high temperatures where the steel was made. And there was a whole set of ingredients that were added to it. And this was all kept secret. But there were a number of plants that were added to the steel, and the carbon structure of these plants would make essentially nanoparticles, these chains of nanoparticle carbon chains in the steel. When it was forged correctly, these would create a banded structure. The term Damascus came from Arab traders that would buy it, you know, in the Indian Ocean. They would sail down and they would buy steel from Sri Lanka and southern India and bring it back up to the Middle East to forge. Damascus, the city in Syria, was a very big center of forging, and so a lot of fine weapons were forged there. Europeans, crusaders, came in contact with these weapons and started calling them Damascus and Damascus steel. So that's where the term Damascus came from. It had a banded pattern. It was it had immense strength. So you didn't have to harden it a lot for it to be a very tough material. It being a little bit softer, it wouldn't break that easily. So it made swords and daggers that were, you know, supposedly able to cut other steel. So this was lost essentially in the 18th century, and as the British colonized India, they banned the production of it because it had been kept secret. The people that knew how to make it were in short supply, and so its technology died. Supposedly, there was a guy in Russia that was able to recreate it. He didn't write down anything. And so Damascus is now the term used for pattern welded steel, where you take two different metals and you weld them together. And that has a banded looking structure. But it's a different steel than the old Wootz steel or old Damascus steel.
Mythical and mysterious. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. Sharp is the new book by Josh Donald from Bernal Cutlery in San Francisco. It's a new book. You should have it on your shelf if you love the history of knives. There's also sharpening sections, cutting techniques, and great recipes from some top chefs with reminiscences about their first knives that they've ever owned, and specialty recipes in the book. It's called Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, and you'll know because there's a beautiful knife on the front of it. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
I'm Erin Brockovich. I've spent 27 years holding Pacific Gas and Electric accountable across this state. That's why I know you need a team that will always be on your side. After the 2017 wildfires, law firms flooded your communities looking to make a quick buck. But our team is different. We are committed to this fight because holding PG&E accountable and giving you the representation you deserve is the right thing to do. We're here to work with all of our clients to build their cases and make sure they're made whole for what they lost in these devastating fires. We're here for you, and we always will be. Learn more at pgelawsuit.com or call us today, 707-237-2445.
The next meetings are Thursday, November 8th at 5:30 p.m. and Saturday the 10th at 10 a.m. at 70 Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa. For more, visit pgelawsuit.com. Noreen Evans of Watts Guerra LLP is the attorney responsible for the content of this advertisement.
In the KS Arto Kitchen, Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash and Josh Donald of Bernal Cutlery in San Francisco. This is a beautiful single subject book. It's the definitive introduction to knives, sharpening and cutting techniques with recipes from great chefs. And Josh, you brought the knife that's on the cover of this book. How old is this knife that graces the cover?
It's most likely from the 60s. And it was an interesting knife. I found a little half dozen of these essentially as new old stock. And at first I didn't know exactly what the story was with them. I could tell they were an old Gyuto, an old Japanese chef's knife, but there was certain things that were a little unusual about it. It's a laminated blade, so it's not a single steel blade like the older Japanese chef's knives. This here is a knife from Masakane, and there's some photos of these knives in the book as well. The single steel Gyuto is much more like the old style French chef's knives or Western chef's knives, and that they're made from one piece of steel. This laminated Gyuto, the Masanosuke, the one that's on the cover, this is an ironclad carbon steel, and these are more common now, but back in the 60s, these weren't very common at all. Gyuto were made with a single steel, so that was kind of intriguing. I sent a bunch of photos to one of my contacts in Japan, and he tracked down the old owner of this company. And so yeah, so it was a kind of a unusual knife.
Let me ask, when I first started cooking professionally a long time ago, my instructors or the chefs that I work with were all old Swiss German kinds of guys, and of course their loyalty was to Swiss German knives and all that stuff. And they told me things like, well, you must always buy a knife that has weight to it and all of that. You must always buy one in which the bolster goes all the way through the handle, because if not, that means it's a cheap knife and you shouldn't buy it, and other things. And the one that really stuck in my mind was the idea of carbon steel versus stainless steel. And they were kind of divided. Some were absolute, oh, it had to be carbon steel. And others were. Can you talk a little bit about carbon versus stainless steel?
And also stamped versus forged. Can you kind of encapsulate that in a summation?
Sure. Well, carbon versus stainless, back Julia Childs would have told you, get a carbon steel knife because it would sharpen easier, it would hold an edge longer. And back in the 60s, that would be true. Stainless steel had not come up to the level of carbon steel in terms of its workability for manufacturers or for cooks maintaining them. The stainless steel would dull faster, would be a little harder to maintain, be a little harder to sharpen. That can still be true. Stainless steel has been improved greatly since then. So there's some really excellent stainless steels these days. It's a rabbit hole that we could really. It's hard to make generalizations. Okay. By and large, I would say, with some big exceptions, and some of the exceptions are sitting right in front of me here. But there, that carbon steel is going to be easier to sharpen, and will have a better cutting feel than stainless steel quite often. But you got to make sure it doesn't rust. It can transfer flavors in a way that stainless won't.
All right.
And then stamped versus forged, it used to be held that a knife that was stamped, so you'd take a sheet of steel and punch out the shape of the knife and then do your heat treatment and then grind it and put a handle on it. That would be the economy knife. So that would be the That would be much less expensive, and it wouldn't be as good.
Could that be the Ginsu? Oh, no.
Well,
oh,
yeah. Like one of mine that I brought in. That I actually really love. It's a Victorinox, and I use this all the time. Sure. So this is an inexpensive one, but I had to show this to you because I just wanted to.
But it's stamped.
I know.
Well, actually, there's plenty of forge knives that are – not really all that exciting, and there's some stamped ones that are really amazing. So it's not really true anymore that stamped is always better than forged. Hand forged, quite often you can, if it's really well hand forged and the heat treatment that goes along with it that is done really well, then that oftentimes will give you some properties you can't get with just stamping. But then I have a Japanese stamp knife here, this one that was made by Ashi-san. And this is stamped and hand ground, and his heat treatments are phenomenal. And this knife is, the cutting feel of it and the sharpenability are amazing. It doesn't hold an edge as long as some other forge knives maybe, but by many metrics, it's, better than a lot of forged ones. So
that's a perfect explanation. We'll take a break and we'll come back with Josh, and we'll get into just a little travelogue, Germany, France, Japan, the cities you visited, and a summation of what you learned in each of those countries about their knives.
And then how to sharpen them.
How to sharpen knives.
Yeah. Right.
And then how do we get, getting fitted for a knife? I think you buy a pair of shoes. I think that might be an interesting exploration also when people are thinking about upgrading their knives. Cool. Sharp is the new book, S-H-A-R-P. It's by Josh Donald of Bernal Cutlery in San Francisco, the definitive introduction to knives, sharpening, and cutting techniques. And that's something we'll ask you about, John, because I never thought about the angle of the cut, completely changing the flavor of food.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. And with recipes from some of the great chefs, Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
When art connoisseurs Elaine and Lee first laid eyes on this 1,600-square-foot remodeled Century home, they knew it was the house for them.
So it's the modern design that really made us love this house.
We were attracted to the tall windows and the openness of the interior. Our passion is the outdoors, so adding a sunroom will make this the perfect home for us.
Everyone's vision is different. You will need to decide how to use your new addition.
Hi, I'm David with Sonoma County Sunrooms. We are the only authorized four-season sunroom dealer right here in Santa Rosa. We want to help find the right sunroom to enhance your lifestyle. With thousands of happy customers, over 30 years in Sonoma County, we know you'll love it. But if you decide to list it later, you'll feel good about increasing the property value of your home. Come in today. We'll start it tomorrow.
Love natural lighting? Call SoCo Sun today and schedule a design consultation to find out the best options for you. Save with our low interest unsecured funding programs today.
Sonoma County Sunrooms. Design, installations, remodeling. Online at SoCoSun.com.
If your New Year's resolutions include being smarter with your money, come into the Home Depot to save big on appliance special buys. Like a Samsung stainless steel gas range, right now just $648. With 5 burners, removable griddle, convection cooking, and almost unlimited possibilities. Now that's smart, with savings that make you extra smart. Save on appliance special buys at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details, valid through January 17th.
Since 1960, the family at Malm Fireplace Center in Santa Rosa has been helping people in Sonoma County with their indoor and outdoor heating needs. But more than ever, during these trying times in our community, Malm is thinking safety first. It's very important for your family to make sure that your gas or pellet stoves are safety checked to make sure everything is operating correctly and efficiently. Visit them at 368 Yolanda Avenue in Santa Rosa or go to malmfireplacecenter.com.
In the KSRO kitchen, right before Thanksgiving and the holidays, the book is Sharp, the definitive introduction to knife sharpening and cutting techniques with recipes from great chefs. And we have Josh Donald of Bernal Cutlery. Oh, I can't even think about the condition of my knives. This was such a guilt inflictor reading your book. Honestly, I have to pay some attention to my knives before Thanksgiving.
So how would you store knives at home? What would you tell people to
do? Well, don't let the edges bang against them. Okay. So don't put them in a drawer. That's the big thing. So,
Do you use a block or do you put them on a magnetic strip? Or?
I use magnets at home, and but blocks work. I just don't have much counter space in my small San Francisco kitchen. So,
how do you store yours?
In a block.
In a block?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So can you tell us about the city you visited in Germany and France and the cities in Japan? Just a little like 30 seconds, a minute in each place. What inspired you in each of those places?
Well, Solingen is the big knife-making town in Germany, and they became one of the main cutlery production areas in the late 19th century. They were very aggressive with instituting some industrial techniques that they combined with really fine handworking, and so they became a big innovator in mass producing cutlery. There were other big mass production centers when they were getting started, and they've really they've by and large mostly abandon the handworking techniques that that in many ways kind of made them famous and gave them such great quality, the quality of the grinding and doing hand forging. We work with a small company out of Solingen, the Robert Herter Company. They still use a lot of those handwork techniques, and so they make some really great knives, but their production is small. They're not filling every knife store that needs knives, like some of the other brands in Solingen do now. Thiers in France, that is an old knife making center in France, organized somewhat similarly to historically to a lot of the places in Japan as well as Solingen, where we have networks of independent craftspeople. So in most knife making centers, it seems that independently they've kind of come up with this system where you have a whole lot of independent craftspeople. You have smiths that do the forging, and then that would be brought over to the grinders who would do the grinding and sharpening. And then that from there would go to the handlers. And in Germany, France, and most of Japan, that's how it went. France in Thiers, they still have a lot of that system going. They don't have the hand forging very important in the 19th and early 20th century.
Before we leave France, this was a mind-blowing fact. In 1976, the French government issues an edict.
Yes, no carbon steel in professional kitchens.
Did you know this, John? I had no idea. And why?
But
is
it
that?
Sounds very French.
Well, I think it was with an eye towards creating a whole bunch of standards for cleanliness in food production, and so some of it makes sense, for sure, and others are a little capricious. I think the notion that carbon steel is dirty because it doesn't look shiny is. For anybody that has any notions of, how microbes work, they don't necessarily always announce themselves with a whole lot of, they're little, right? But so the carbon steel knives that are made in Thiers still mostly get exported. So it's and I was surprised to learn this that a lot of the a lot of people. Know French knives from, the mm-hmm. knives of Julie Childstammer, they found an old one at a estate sale or flea market or something like that, or they, got one from, family member, or they inherited something, this old great carbon steel French knives, right? So those really have kind of gone completely out of...
And that was Sabatier, right?
Yes, so there were 8 million different companies that used the name Sabatier. Yeah, so you can crumple a can and sharpen it and call it a Sabatier.
I have some of those and they're all rusted out. Yes. But I can't get rid of them. I just love them. And then the cities you visited in Japan.
So the places where we have our contacts in Japan, where the craftspeople that we work with, and at the time of writing the book a couple years ago, Sakai is the main center. That's the for handmade knives, the Solingen of Japan. There's another city, Seki, that has the most of the industrial knife making, but Sakai is the main center of handmade knife making. That's essentially connected to Osaka, and then there's there's Sanjo up in Niigata in the northwest of Japan. We have a lot of contacts in that city as well. They work a little bit differently in that in Sakai. Sakai really has a system of separated craftspeople. So you would have knife brands or companies that would be selling the knives that are kind of like project managers. They will arrange for the forging of the blades. They'll arrange for the grinding.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll get handles from handle makers in Sakai, and they'll assemble the knives themselves. Usually, sometimes the assembly will be done by one of those craftsmen. But very separated system of production in Sakai with dedicated craftspeople. So if you're a smith, you forge. That's what you do. If you're a grinder, that's what you do. And then in Sanjo in Niigata, the smiths do their own grinding typically. So a little bit of a different production style there, but also very mostly there's some large scale knife making that goes on in Sanjo and a lot of very small knife making that goes on there. So we mostly get some, the small, individual smiths that are doing all their own work, but we also get knives from a couple of larger.
So are we talking about a lot of money for these knives? Are they expensive?
They're not really all that expensive. Yeah. You can get, we have Japanese chef's knives starting around $100. Mm-hmm. We do get some that are less, it's kind of rustic style ones that don't have a fancy handle on it at all. Mm-hmm. And even, most of the Japanese knives, they're not putting in tons and tons of work into the handle, so that's not adding a lot of expense. But you can get a really great quality handmade knife for $200 to $300.
It'll last you a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. If you don't drop it, and if you don't,
it depends on how long you live.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so hopefully you use it up.
Well, I think you mentioned the Western knives are a little bit more masculine. I mean, you can pound on them a little more, and they don't require as much care as the Japanese.
The Japanese typically, and this is again a generalization, but it usually holds. The Japanese knives are typically made harder, so higher carbon steel that's tempered harder, and it's going to hold an edge longer, but it requires more deliberate use. So, vegetables, boneless proteins. So you can't necessarily, butcher a chicken and then go cut shallots with it.
Got it.
But when you do cut shallots with it, it's phenomenal.
Got it.
So how to sharpen a knife? Can you give it to us in two minutes? How to do it? Teach me how to do it.
There's the sharpening part, and there was another great chapter about the stones.
That's part of the sharpening process.
So Japanese knife sharpening, in a way, doesn't differ all that much from sharpening any other knife. We're removing metal to create a fresh new angle. And refining that. How fine we polish it is going to depend on the use of the knife and the type of the steel. A boning knife that's going to be used for, raw meat, that we need a toothy edge. A vegetable knife that is going to be used for doing fine cuts with vegetables needs a really fine edge typically. Japanese stones can get much finer grit than other stones because many of the knives function really well at a fine polish. Many Western knives will initially cut well at a very fine polish, but then feel kind of washed out and dull quickly. So a toothier, kind of coarser edge can be better for them.
Okay.
For knife maintenance, a steel or ceramic rod is a great tool for keeping the edge up. It's not great once it gets really dull, but while you're using your knife, it's going to start to dull a little bit. And if you're in the middle of cooking and you need a real quick fix, then those rod type sharpeners are a great thing. A couple swipes. Make sure your angle is consistent with the angle of the bevels that make the edge, and a couple swipes and you're back in business. So for Western knives or Japanese knives that aren't tempered super hard, a metal steel will work. Mm-hmm. For other ones, a ceramic one.
Okay, that's a perfect explanation. You always keep your rod by your side when you're cooking.
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry, that didn't come out. But we'll take a break. We've got about 10 minutes left with Josh, and one of you will win an autographed copy of this beautiful book, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know or Things You Didn't Possibly Think About Knowing About Knives. It's called Sharp, the definitive introduction to knives, sharpening, and cutting techniques with recipes from great chefs by Josh Donald of Bernal Cutlery in San Francisco. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen.
Hello, Sonoma County. It's your boy Joe Pags here with your early evenings. Congratulations to Pat Kerrigan and KSRO on winning two Marconi Awards.
Hi, I'm Carol. As owner of the Gift Horse Home Store, I've assembled an amazing collection of holiday items to create a unique and wonderful season of home decor.
Hi, I'm Carlene. We have some wonderful holiday gift ideas for you. Lodge, a great selection for that special person in your life. Tramontina, offering the best stock pots and roasting pans for your Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners. Mention this ad and receive 10% off. Le Creuset, which would make a great gift for anyone, has a house special on the Zen tea kettles. Regularly $80, now $59.99.
The Gift Horse also carries beautiful tabletop, bed, and table linens. If your home is missing that certain something, come to the Gift Horse and you just might find that perfect home accent.
From our door to your door.
We're next to Garaday's Hardware in Hillsburg.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
Home decor and more.
Open every day 9 to 6.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
We've worked our way very rapidly through the tremendously entertaining and informative book Sharp by Josh Donald of Bernal Cutlery, of course, all about knives. And we're kind of getting down to the methods and recipes section. That was really fascinating.
Well, so you talk in here about stones, and in the Japanese tradition is wet stones.
Mm-hmm.
So
use water.
And why water and not oil?
The stones are made to be friable, so they're the synthetic stones that are mostly used nowadays are the synthetic versions of naturally occurring stones. And the naturally occurring stone that became the finishing stone for Japanese tools and knives were these stones that are mined around Kyoto. They're made from the silica skeletons of microorganisms that were building these muds on the seafloor during these particular stones are from the Jurassic period, and these radiolarian muds that formed on the seafloor were hardened into stone, and you know eventually got scraped up onto the island of Japan, and there's a little narrow band of them right around Kyoto that can be used for sharpening. Incidentally, in Northern California, we do have stones from radiolarians that are from the same general age, but they went through a different geologic process and are more flinty and can't be used for sharpening. Uh-huh. So this is more like a unfired clay in a way, a very fine clay. So you would put some water on this and use it to polish the steel. For coarser grits, you would also use it with water. Mm-hmm. Part of how the stones work is that the mud that generates as you start sharpening helps to wash away the spent metal that you remove from the knife, and also to expose fresh new abrasives from the stone. And so the stone keeps its cutting ability as you use it up. You're not using the same piece of abrasive. So if you were to think of a non-friable stone, would be like granite. So if you were to crack a piece of granite, you'd see a bunch of crystals, and they were all locked together. The Japanese stones are more like a clay that's not fired, so it's, you know, comes apart a little bit, or like sandstone.
So again, thinking about a great gift for somebody, you also give classes, don't you?
We do classes in
how to sharpen and what's, I mean that whole idea of how to examine a knife and figure out which stone to use with it. And
sure, it's fairly simple. You know, if you go online and start looking it up, it can seem like there's a lot more to it than there essentially is. There's a lot of fabulous information, you know, online, of course, but, you know, as I read online, Abraham Lincoln said, only half of the things you read online are true.
So. I want to ask you, the longevity and life of a knife can be affected by what we're cutting on, the surface that we're cutting on. You brought in a particular cutting board. Give us an idea of why this would be might be a good choice for consumers.
Yeah. So by and large, we recommend either end grain hardwood or length grain softwood for cutting boards. Cutting board will, it's going to be in contact with the edge of the knife, and you know the knife is going to be used with some force on it quite often. And so a really hard material, wood that has a really hard grain, if we're cutting on the grain itself, it's going to dull the knife a little more. Mm-hmm. Bamboo has very hard fibers in it, and those hard fibers can dull the edge of the knife. And if it's a mosaic of end grain pieces of bamboo put together, that's not going to dull the knife.
What is this? Who's the manufacturer of this cutting board?
This cutting board here is made from Japanese hinoki wood, which is a dense softwood. Uh-huh. So we get these in from Japan. And this is one that I've had at home that's been abused for 3 or 4 years. And
it's an amazing condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what we would look for.
Yeah.
That's a good gift for Christmas.
So we should do it now, just so we don't forget your shop and how to find you and how to call you and
okay.
your website.
Thank you. Yes, so we have two shops, actually. We have one shop in San Francisco that's at 593 Guerrero Street at 18th Street in the Mission District. And then we just opened up a shop in Oakland at 40th and Broadway, North Oakland. And we have a website, BernalCutlery.com.
It seems like it's geared more towards professionals, but would someone just looking for a good set of knives be comfortable?
Oh, yeah. No, we sell to a big mix of people. So it's, a lot of our sourcing is done with professionals in mind, but also home cooks in mind, too. So we keep it real accessible. We keep a good variety of stuff in and it's not something where when you come in, you have to have an encyclopedic knowledge of knives in order to talk with us. We're super open and like turning people on to new stuff. So,
and give people tips about their hand size. And well, I want you to chop this carrot for us. Let's see what your technique is. And is this comfortable? I mean, I like the idea of being fit for a knife.
Sure. Usually the first questions that I'll ask people when they come in and they're looking for a knife is, how many people they cook for, if it's going to be at home or professional, but how many people they cook for and whether they feel that they're going to be wanting to pick up sharpening with stones themselves.
Okay.
So there's some I'm probably not going to, work on my car like some people will, for say. So so for me to,
you and me both.
Yeah. So, no judgments there, but, people are into that, but honestly, like I'm not going to get an old car that needs to get worked on all the time, right? Yeah. So for some people, getting a knife that needs sharpening a lot isn't going to be the best choice for them. So we have some knives that hold an edge for a long time, and you can just kind of keep up with a sharpening rod, and that might be the best fit for them. Length, can be a lot of times people will want to use a real short knife for everything. Mm-hmm. We'll try and push them to something a little bigger, not to make a big sale, but just to get a little more utility out of the knife. So,
and weight, but how does this feel weight wise?
If you're gonna be doing a lot of people are used to heavy knives,
yeah.
So we'll sometimes try and kind of push giving them a light knife. Uh-huh. If they're gonna be using it a little roughly, or they're gonna share it with people that might use it roughly, then we might put other ones in. Mm-hmm. But there's a number of really light knives that cut really easily. So there's a couple knives where the weight of the knife helps you with the cutting, but that's not a chef's knife. Mm-hmm. So for chef's knives, a thinner knife is going to cut smoother and easier, and you're not going to need to use as much force. Mm-hmm. So like if this carrot that we have sitting in front of us that everybody can see on the radio, if we were to choose, a thick knife and a thin knife to cut it with, the thin knife is going to zip right through it. It's going to need much less effort to cut, because it's the effort that you put in goes right to the edge rather than to the sides wedging the carrot. It's not going to crack it. And we'll get, better cut. And then if we were thinking about cutting an onion, we don't have an onion here for
thank heavens.
For our listeners. Yes, I know. There's no smell-o-vision either.
But intuitively, you would think you'd want a heavier knife with the carrot, just because carrots are, they can be a little tough, harder.
But
so if you had something heavier, that would cut through it easier.
No. Not so. Uh-uh. So we have to ask you your favorite number today between 1 and 12, Josh.
That's going to be 7.
Caller number 7 at 636-1350 won an autographed copy of this brand new book, Sharp, the Definitive Introduction to Knives Sharpening and Cutting Techniques with Recipes from Great Chefs. Caller number 7, 636-1350 by Josh Donald of Bernal Cutlery. I will be, when I'm coming to San Francisco next week, I'm going to have to stop in and visit your shop.
Please do.
Very exciting. Thank you for coming up, bringing these extraordinarily beautiful knives to us. Many of them photographed in the book.
That's right.
And thank you, John Ash.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Are you going to upgrade your knives, or are you sticking with
them? No, what I'll probably just stick with what I have, but maybe pick up a couple when I come to visit you.
You have to try one today, though.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. After we get off the air, we have run you through with all these knives and see what you like. Thanks. It's very exciting. And I also want to remind folks that there's great recipes. You picked some terrific chefs to share their knife experiences and some of their top recipes.
And the other thing was that great pictures of how to hold things. And I mean, so it's really just an instructive book for that part of it.
Thank you. Our photographer, Molly DeCadreau, did a fabulous job. So,
well, don't be surprised if this gets nominated and possibly wins Best Single Subject Cookbook of the Year at next year's Cookbook Awards. I'm predicting it right now because it's really terrific, Josh.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk again next week. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash from the KSRO Kitchen.